Howdy do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. Today is Monday. It is the 14th of June, 2021. I am your host, Kelly Gamont. With me today, I have Charlotte Henry. Hi, Charlotte.
Hello, hello.
Glad you're here. Also with me today, I have Brian Chaffin. Hi, Brian.
Hey, Kelly.
Good to be here.
Glad you're both here. Now, I have both of you here to talk about a couple of interesting things that happened last week, one of which is the Apple Design Awards came out. That usually happens during WWDC. And we got, I want to say that they did some adjusting this year with sort of what the categories were, but these were some category, these were some apps that people may be familiar with, maybe aren't familiar with. There were quite a few things that I thought were in there that got some nice nominees. Brian, what stood out to you as far as the design award winners? Because mostly what I noticed was the ones that I use.
Well, sure, that makes sense. I'm going to make you edit because I honestly didn't have enough time to go over.
Well, Carrot Weather was one that won, and I liked that it was the winner for interaction. And part of that is because it got a complete overhaul, I think, last year. And you can use the interface elements it gives you to sort of build the weather app that you desire, or like the weather dashboard that you desire. And it's and so I really like that I can have it show me exactly what I want to see. So I find that very handy with Carrot Weather in particular. Social impact, the winner for apps under social impact was an app called Be My Eyes, which is another one I use, I have installed. And people who have vision impairment can use the app and call other people and who do not, and get assistance with different things. I don't get very many calls, but when I do, it's things like this expiration date is very small. Can you tell me what it says? Or which of these shirts is the blue one, and things like that. So it's kind of nice to get a random question from somebody once in a while and help them out. Go ahead.
There was an app in there that was nominated in the inclusivity category that you mentioned, but it actually didn't win this time around, because I'm sure it must have won in the past and been recognized by Apple in the past. I use it the whole time. It's one password. Cut to a clip of Andrew telling everyone to get a password manager.
Yes.
Return to show. One password is my password manager of choice. So I was glad to see that recognized. I literally use it tens of times a day.
Yeah. Same. And one of the things I think with the inclusivity on that was mostly that, they've done a lot to make it controllable through voice control and screen reading compatible and things like that, which I appreciate. Which of these, Charlotte, stood out to you? There's only a couple of others, I think, on the whole list that are ones that I use or am familiar with. So I'm curious what you usually think.
I picked out one puzzle because that is the main one I use. I actually don't use Carrot because I actually use the Apple Weather app. So for me, it is one password. It is the main one for me. I'm going to check out a couple. There was a couple actually that made me quite compelled to check them out. So maybe
I'm looking at Little Orpheus now, which was a nominee, not a winner. And that looks super fun. And it's part of Arcade for those keeping score at home.
We're talking about kind of awards and challenges that happened at WWDC, I think it'd be quite nice to give a shout out to the Swift Student Challenge winners. Apparently this year there was more women and it was a more diverse crowd than ever before, so that was pretty cool as well.
I remember you wrote that up at the time when they announced those awards. It was pretty interesting. I always like to see in the before times, that was the there were scholarship winners that would get tickets, and I always liked seeing what the apps looked like that people built as part of their scholarship. So the Swift UI stuff, I spent a little time with, and it was cool. I like seeing the interactivity in those, so that was pretty nifty.
Yeah, so it was more young women than ever applied for that as well. So that's pretty cool as well when we're looking at the whole collection of stuff that people used and was announced over during WWDC.
Yeah, because we did get a pretty big wall of announcements, and we're going to talk about another one of those in depth momentarily, because that's basically the second half of the show for us today. But
I need to correct myself though.
Yes.
Little Orpheus won in delight and fun, but it was also a visuals and graphics nominee.
Ah, okay. Visual and graphics. Yeah. Yeah.
I agree with you. Actually, that looks like quite a fun game to play.
Yeah. I looked at it and went, oh, maybe I should check that out. But I don't think I have Apple Arcade anymore. I'll have to check. So we'll see. I do want to talk about another thing that came out of WWDC last week. But first, I'd like to take a minute and talk to you about this week's sponsor, who is Upstart. Paying off debt sometimes feels like an uphill battle, especially if you've got something where you have a high interest rate and all you can really manage is the minimum monthly payments. Then Upstart is here to help you get ahead. Over 500,000 people used Upstart to get a simple fixed monthly payment. Everything's handled online, and Upstart looks at more than just your credit score, so they offer smarter rates via trusted partners. If you go through a 5-minute online rate check, you can get a rate upfront for a loan from $1,000 to $50,000, and you can even receive funds as soon as one business day after accepting. So you can find out how Upstart can lower your monthly payments today by going to upstart.com/TDO. That's upstart.com/TDO. Don't forget to use my URL. Let them know I sent you. Loan amounts will be determined based on your credit, income, and certain other information provided in your loan application. Go to upstart.com/TDO. And we'd like to thank Upstart for sponsoring the show today. Now, one of the things that came out of DubDub last week was we got an in-depth look at the next version of macOS, which is Monterey. And we got to see
I've been to real Monterey.
As have I.
Just thought.
It's nice.
It's not Lima for you.
Yeah, but it's also nice to it's nice when you recognize them. You know, it's nice to, like, wait, that's actually a place I've been. One of the things that we discovered after the fact, after seeing a bunch of great features that Apple said were coming to Monterey, is that they're not coming to Monterey for everybody. And Charlotte, you had an interesting link out to a piece that sort of called Apple out for that.
So, yeah, a couple of things. As you say, there were lots of exciting things that happened and were announced as part of macOS Monterey. Some of the kind of what you might call them headline features, but certainly some of the features people would want to use quite regularly, will not work if you're not using macOS Monterey on an M1 device or presumably future Apple Silicon powered devices. Mm-hmm. So some of those include portrait mode, live text in photos, some of the maps improvements, some of the text-to-speech in other languages. Well played, I would say, to Matt Rumors, who picked up on that, first of all. Mm-hmm. And it was an interesting, and again, I noticed this, it's interesting for a number of reasons that we'll come up to, but just have in the back of your mind, according to Macworld, and we've seen these rumors swirling around as well in other places, there's meant to be another Mac Pro with an Intel processor later this year, I think.
Interesting.
Which I don't quite understand, but that's a rumor.
Who's saying that? Anyway, that's a rumor,
that
right?
That was from Mac. Yeah, it was a story published by Macworld, but you know, these rumors have been circulated. We know already that the most recent version of the Mac Pro obviously still has an Intel. We haven't got an Apple Silicon Mac Pro yet. So all of that stuff is worth bearing in mind. So that's the technical kind of practical approach to this. The other approach that made me think about it was a really good piece actually from Oliver Haslam at iMore. And he made the point that had Apple or an Apple executive come up onto their, and you know, done their segment on the video talking about this and gone, this new operating system works best on the M1 Mac. This is why the M1 and Apple Silicon is so fantastic. Look at all the cool stuff you can do. This is why you should upgrade your computer from a Intel Mac to an Apple Silicon Mac.
From a mere mortal Intel processor to the new highest.
Correct. Yeah. Right, exactly. And then that would have been a really open, relatively open and honest way to deal with it. It would have, from a PR selling sales standpoint, it would have made Apple be really endorsing one of its key strategic moves. It would have worked. And instead of, you know, reporters like the people I spoke about at Mac Rumors, me digging around, having a look at it as well, there's lots of people and lots of conversation about it. It required us to find this out, as opposed to Apple going, here is this thing, it's the next part of our transition. Isn't it exciting what these new computers can do? And they didn't do that. And that's, I think, quite disappointing. I think there's also, I guess, a discussion about whether it is reasonable and technically necessary for certain features to be limited to Apple Silicon.
Well, Apple could have stopped any need to have that discussion by explaining it.
Yeah.
So in the same way that it was an opportunity for Apple to say, our desktop silicon is amazing. In the same way that would have been a fantastic opportunity for Apple to promote that and tout that, they could have also headed off any kvetching, especially, like, you know, I think about the folks who have the very expensive Mac Pros not being able to do some of this stuff. And, you know, very expensive Mac Pros they might have just bought. If the M1 processor is truly required for the features that aren't available outside of M1 Max, then for one thing, I think Apple should sell some kind of add-on for the Mac Pro that includes the M1 processor so that it can handle, you know, that it can handle those tasks that are needed. But also,
because Mac Pro users definitely want to spend more money on that machine.
Well, there's spending more money and getting the functionality that because of, for instance, if the neural engine is required for stuff, if I had spent $15,000 on a Mac Pro, I'd rather spend another grand on some kind of insert and be able to use the neural engine.
Which I'd point out is the way things used to work, and part of the reason people used to buy what was the Mac Pro was because that was the thing that you could do. Yes, I'm going to spend thousands of dollars on this computer, but it's going to last me a really long time because I can add a new processor, I can add more RAM, I can put in a bigger hard drive or a faster this or that over time. Like, that was part of the investment you were making in that machine.
Yeah, so, just before I forget, because Brian rightly focused on the neural engine, which is a very important part of this story.
Yes.
Because reading through that piece by Oliver at iMorn, my understanding is that the lack of neural engine in an Intel chip is part of the reason why some of this functionality doesn't happen.
Mm-hmm. But the other side of that, though, is that any people who, you know, don't have M1 Max, and keep in mind that Apple is selling non-M1 Max right now.
Today.
Today, and if they saw those announcements and are excited about it, and maybe they're not paying super close attention to the stories that say, whoa, wait a minute, you know, some of the stuff doesn't work, then they're going to end up being disappointed. So it's not just missed opportunity. It's also they're slacking. They're slacking on being honest. Right. There needs to be direct communication about this stuff because it's kind of important. If a new feature is important enough to show it off and it requires your own, you know, silicon, tell us about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm standing here applauding. I totally agree with you. I think we could have a broader conversation about look, Apple has never been the most open company, but there is a difference between keeping your like key future strategic decisions and key IP decisions secret, yeah, and not telling people the whole truth when you've actually making stuff public.
Yeah, and it's whole truth and missed opportunity, both.
Yeah. Right, exactly. And I think we're certainly veering from the former to the latter. Plus, I don't understand it from a PR strategic point of view from Apple for right. the, you know, for the well, missed opportunity.
And I don't understand it because we've seen Apple do it before. We've seen Apple take even every iteration of Apple, right? Like Apple under Steve Jobs, Apple under Tim Cook. It's not like they've never taken a little sideways jab at Android or even Intel, like back in the day. These are things that have happened before. And currently, Intel, not that long ago, had a PR campaign where they were basically talking smack about Apple's machines that contain Intel chips, which was sort of funny. But like, it would absolutely make sense to use it as an opportunity to go, hey, look how great an M1 chip is because we have the magical neural engine that makes these things possible. Like, we've seen Apple do that before. We've seen Apple use something like, you know, an evolution in some particular technology to point out a shortcoming in something else, whether it was Windows or whether it was another processor or whether it was, you know, another operating system. So it definitely feels weird to find out like these are things, especially because they didn't even just say, like, they didn't even just take the chance to upsell, but didn't make clear that these were not features that were coming to everyone. And they also didn't really say much about the M1 processor as part of this anyway. And it feels like developers have a vested interest in being able to build effectively for this whole new architecture. So it did seem like a thing that should have gotten a mention. So it is... Yeah. Very confusing. It's a very confusing move from Apple, and turns out to just be the latest in a series. Because, you know, as long time, actually, you don't even have to be a long time listener. As listeners who just picked up Daily Observations in June discovered, we had to have a couple of different conversations about lossless audio and who can listen to it and how it's going to actually work, because Apple sort of missed the opportunity there to turn it into something where it was very clear. And it took upwards of a week, I think, to get the actual support document from Apple that's like, this is what we really mean and this is who can really have it. So I don't know. I don't know what happened with all of that, but maybe it just got lost in the WWC DC shuffle. We'll see. But
when you've got an hour and 45 minutes of stage time, there is 30 seconds to a minute available to explain this clearly.
Yeah. And we've seen them do it on iOS. When something comes to the latest model, you know, portrait mode is only available on the iPhone 10. It will not be available on, you know, on other hardware, even if you have the same software. Like, they've done this sort of thing before. This will only be available on iOS 15, on an iPhone 12 Pro, you know, whatever.
And the bit I truly can't get my head around, and I've thought, you know, I read the piece, did a little link teaser and follow up to it, had the discussion off air with you guys when we were working the show. Throughout all of that, I cannot work out what Apple gains from having not disclosed it.
Yeah.
That's the bit I can't get my head around. Both in, never mind, okay, so the developers have to dig out. But like, I don't get what Apple thought the benefit of not saying this on stage was.
Yeah. I got nothing.
Were they expecting a load of, like, you know, normal, regular users to excitedly turn on their iPhone, turn up on their Macs, that, you know, people using M1 Macs, try and use some of the features they'd read in the, you know, little brief you get when you upload some new, install some new software.
Yeah.
What, you know, were they expecting people to try and use these new features and not work and then wonder out why? Like, I don't quite understand what the process here was that made them go, let's just cut that 30 seconds to a minute and then you just tell people that.
I'm not sure either. If you have any idea, please let us know. You can get a hold of us at observations@macobserver.com, TMO Daily on Twitter, or by leaving comments in the show notes. If you have any insight into this, or perhaps a better explanation than any of us can come up with, which is we don't really have one, please let us know. Brian and Charlotte, thank you so much for being on the show today. I'm your host, Kelly Gamott. I will talk to all of you tomorrow. In the meantime, be excellent to each other. Let's be careful out there.